I'll have open lines for you next hour, but this hour we'll take your phone calls as we talk about consciousness right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast as we continue talking about consciousness, the name of the book, Subtle Activism. David, where do you get the book?
You can get the book on Amazon, or you can go to subtleactivism.net, and that's the main book website.
With everything that's been going on the world right now,
yeah,
do you think we really can change global events?
Well, I think that it's definitely a time where we need to be looking for new tactics, you know, new approaches. It's definitely, obviously, a very turbulent moment and a critical transition point. So that's where I feel like there's actually a need to be more open than before to, you know, new approaches that maybe have not been tried. So, you know, I feel like this is one of the few things coming through that, you know, offers some new positive way forward, again, with this notion that collectively we might be discovering something as a species in terms of, you know, the power of consciousness when we can harness it, you know, en masse, that, you know, this can play a role. You know, it's not a magic bullet, but I think that it can offer some holding, some soothing for all of this chaos that we're seeing, which I think could be very critical.
Lynn McTaggart does intention experiments,
And
she has tried to minimize crime, for example, in Washington, D.C., and she's done things that are very successful. I think she's onto something.
Yeah, no, I know Lynn McTaggart's research well, and I think she did some experiment in Sri Lanka as well, where they got a lot of people to focus on a certain area there, and they got, you know, interesting results. So, you know, there's many groups. You know, this is not just Thomas Hubel in Germany is a spiritual teacher who's doing very interesting experiments, bringing Germans and Jews together to do healing events, healing rituals, which have been brought an incredible healing at deep levels. And lots of different groups are looking into this. So it's definitely something that's emerging in many places around the world.
I think it's fascinating. Yeah. What a great tool for people to use to be able to change things.
Yeah, yeah. And again, that sense of empowerment from feeling like we're not just at effect, but we can actually respond. You know, this is, I think so many of us these days are just in reaction. We get bombarded with, you know, news and so on that activate us, our reactions. But this is a place where we can sort of center ourselves in our deepest core and respond from that place, from a more creative, empowered place.
Definitely. Definitely, it makes you think that there is a divine creator when you use this in trying to affect things.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you tune into these subtler levels, you just become aware that that you're part of something bigger, and that, you know, there's this creative intelligence that, you know, you're interacting with, that we're embedded in, you know, we're embedded in. And that's definitely how I feel it works, is in cooperation with that force.
All right, let's go to the phones. Let us go to Jeff in Santa Cruz, California to get things going. Hey, Jeffrey, go ahead.
Oh, hey, good evening, guys.
Hi.
Hey, yeah, David, George, good work. Three cheers. Great stuff tonight.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, I think we're on the same wavelength for sure. I just published a book called Putting Wisdom to Work about how to use personal policy to employ subtle energy in daily living.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just an extension of the, you know, the law of attraction, and it really does work. But I'm curious what David has to say about, you know, this crazy media world we live in. And, you know, from Trump to terrorism, it's just so much craziness. It's kind of seems like a static, you know, and it makes it hard to get a coherent thought going.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, one of the things that I've been feeling lately for myself is just, you know, the importance of taking diets from the media from time to time, to find our information from a different source, you know, to tune in ourselves to what is happening, rather than, because there's a certain narrative, you know, that just is coming through that activates our startled sort of response, and I don't think that's healthy. And I know it's difficult, you know, can't put our head in a in the ground or anything, but
sometimes we wish we could.
Yeah, right.
Well, that's funny, because I actually wrote down media diet here. One of the next things.
Oh, was that right? Yeah. You know, I think it's very healthy from, you know, every now and then. Otherwise, we're just getting sort of strung out on this particular frequency that's, I don't think, healthy for us in the long run.
Well, I'm all over your website. I just joined your list. You got a lot of good stuff going on there, lots of events coming up, and three cheers to both you guys. I love all your good work, and keep it up.
Thanks, Jeff. So much, you're man. Out there in one of our favorite spots, the KSCO land out there in Santa Cruz. Mm-hmm. Tell me about your Be the Peace global meditation event.
Yeah, so in 2012, we began this Be the Peace event, and the simple invitation for people to organize a meditation event where they live. We have a map. People put their events on the map, and then we also do a virtual event so that people can tune in from their living rooms. And it's been just a beautiful event. We had, in the first year, we had 248 events, and it's grown pretty much exponentially since then. Last year, we had about 1,400 meditation circles. And this year, it's happening on Saturday, this coming Saturday, September 24th. And we're hoping to get over 2,000 circles. So, you know, people can still tune into that, plug into that. They can go to peace.unify.org and, you know, sign up or get into the broadcast. You can just listen from your own home. And it's a really beautiful experience to get so many people from so many different cultures around the world who are sharing that moment of, or really an hour of deep, you know, silence, of meditation, of connecting around a shared intention of bringing peace to our crazy world.
Let us go to Karen in Philadelphia. Hello there, Karen. Go ahead.
Good morning, my fellow spiritual brethren.
Good morning.
Hi, Karen.
David and George, you're making my night, morning and afternoon, because this is a topic very close to my heart. As a 37-year meditator, I joined the Brahma Kumaris in 1995, which is an Indian group of women, basically, and men who do a lot of meditations. And I went to India in 96 to a university that they have up in the Rajasthan in a mountain called Mount Abu. And I highly recommend that you search out a woman in, I think she's in Manhattan, or Brooklyn, named Sister Jenna. Mm. Sister Jenna is part of the Brahma Kumaris, but I experienced a intent meditation that we all, when we came back to different parts of the world, were to do three times a day, and we had our own focus to make. The ones that I selected for the city of Philadelphia were all manifested. And so I know that this intentional meditation is a really powerful thing. Even if one person makes a decision to do it religiously at a certain hour, you will see the results no matter what's going on around you. Mm. So thank you for bringing this topic to light. And please check out, have you heard of the Brahma Kumaris?
Sister Jenna is a very good friend of mine. I love Sister Jenna. I spent time with her, so I know them well.
Wonderful. We'll check into their intentional meditations, because it's a very powerful group of people all over the world, which they do it three times a day. Everyone does their own intent for their city, and the things are really, really wonderful that manifest. So thank you for getting this
work. They do beautiful work. Yeah, thank you so much, Karen.
Do you think, David, that if the world was in chaos, well, it is in chaos, actually, but that those people who can concentrate, meditate in a positive way could really alter things?
I think they can definitely help. Like I said, I never like to make an outlandish claim that it's like a magic bullet that just solves everything instantly.
Right.
I do feel that, especially as more and more people do it, you know, it's a latent power that we're still discovering, but as more and more people do it, and we also learn how to do it in a really coherent way, then I definitely believe it helps. I feel like it creates a holding on a deep level. Just like, you know, if you're going through some sort of crisis, or, you know, or sometimes an analogy I use is if a mother is going through labor and she has, you know, there's the concept of a doula, someone who just sort of sits with her through that process and provides that calming kind of support. It's just enough to get through that chaotic moment, that crisis moment, or that you know, initiation, if you like. And so I think on a collective level, one way to think about what we're going through is like a collective species initiation, and that can involve a lot of chaos. But if enough of us hold space for that process, I think it could be a very crucial element in giving us just enough room to get through without going crazy.
Let's go to Charles in Elgin, Texas. Good morning, Charles. Thank you.
Oh, hello. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Oh, great. Let's see. Well, I don't even know where to start here, but this is the first time I've actually ever called your show.
Well, great. I'm glad you got in.
It's very emotional this year. Somebody very close to me, his name was Bill, and my dad. He had a very powerful sort of, I don't know what to call it, a heart radiance. It seemed almost like broadcasting, except that it didn't use radio waves or anything. At different things in his life, he's been many different things. He was a Marine embassy guard for a while, and he did a lot of. He would talk with ambassadors because this heart radiance of his, he could get people to do kind of do the right thing, the good thing, and it also would have mass effects. He could seem to when he would be walking around or you know, he could always. We live outside of a very trendy city now, but at the time it used to have a quiet power in Austin. But he was murdered.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Earlier this year.
This was your father you're talking about?
Yeah, this is my dad. He was quite a hero in his life. But that's how he ended up being a Marine Embassy guard, because they gave him a choice of anything he wanted. But because he rescued a building full of people and was in boot camp and was burning. It was the risk of his life, and he was in the hospital for a while. And when he finished up boot camp, he ended up in the... It's just a long story. But
Did he meditate a lot?
You know, the funny thing is, he was... Well, later on, he was a courier. He got captured shipping gold to the capital of Laos, Vientiane. By a Chinese group in Laos. Wow. And so he's in a prison of war camp for a long time. And one of the local Buddhist monks would come, and they were allowed in the camp, and they would do things, and they brought him a book. And the book was, of course, the camp guys figured, well, he's not going to be able to read it. It's in, you know, the, you know, language. It's in another language. He's an American, you know. But it was a book. I think it was in Pali or something on the outside. But there was a center section in the book that was in English. And it was very clearly suggested that, you know, if you meditate, it was very bad, I don't know, karma or whatever, for prison guard, for example, to disturb you when you're meditating. So how he escaped more torture and more other things was he did meditate in the camp there. So
that's probably where he learned his trait, I guess. Any spot, David, will do, won't it?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like something opened in his heart in a really big way that other people could sense. Is that how it was?
I want to ask you, too, about monks and their incredible ability to meditate. What makes them, what made them tap into this so well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, I think there's just the discipline and the dedicating themselves over and over and over to tapping into these levels, you know, to tuning in, to not getting lost in the distractions that, you know, many of us do in the world, and that, you know, can cultivate that channel in a very pure way. You know, some people, I think, if you're around some monks or nuns or, you know, who have been in these orders for years and years, there's a certain silence around them that's really striking. And, you know, so if they've had the time and the discipline to do that, then, you know, you see these extraordinary abilities emerge.
Well, you know, they have taken a vow of chastity. They have taken a vow of poverty. Mm-hmm. They, you know, just wear their little robes and their sandals.
Right.
I wonder if that has anything to do with it, the fact that, you know, they're not into clothes or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, they're purified, I suppose, in many ways, and it makes their consciousness also very pure and open. You know, I think in our age, I feel like the challenge is actually more to be, you know, in the world while we're also developing spiritually. But, you know, but then again, it's also different strokes for different folks. So some people are still called to that lifestyle. But, you know, I personally think a cutting edge for right now is how to operate in the world, you know, with this awareness.
Let's take another call before the break. We shall go to Mary in Snowflake, Arizona. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call, George.
Sure.
And David, I just wanted to thank you for discussing this and making people aware that we can collectively change things. We absolutely can. But you do have to believe and you have to, you know, activate on your own. And I do believe very much that you caused the birth of those orcas because your love was such, you know, that it just brought it into being.
Mm-hmm.
And but anyway, I did want to share something that I think is the most perfect illustration I've ever seen
mm-hmm.
in film or anything of what fate is. That, and I can't think of the name of it, but it was the Steven Spielberg third in the sequel, Indiana Jones one, where you know, they went to Petra and they were fighting the Nazis for the Grail, the Holy
yeah.
Grail. And Indiana Jones, his father had been wounded, and he had to get over to the other side of the gap there or whatever where the tunnel was.
He said a penitent man, remember?
The penitent, absolutely. That he had to get over there and get that cup of Christ to come back to give to his father for healing. And it was just this big open gap, and he had no idea how to do it. And he leaned down, and he picked up a handful of sand. And there was no way that, you know, he could see to get across. But he threw that sand out in faith. You know, his father was praying for him on the other side, and he threw that sand out, and then the walkway appeared.
That's right. And then that was Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. We're going to come back in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and Final Phone Calls next. Next hour, open lines. This hour, the rest of your calls with David Nickel as we talk about his work, Subtle Activism, about consciousness. So make sure you're still with us for the rest of the program. Okay, welcome back. Our final segment with David Nickel as we talk about his work, Subtle Activism. And again, give us that definition of subtle activism again, David.
It's subtle activism. It's the use of consciousness-based practices like meditation and prayer and ritual for collective transformation as opposed to using it for personal transformation. So.
When people apply this, when they use it, how do they know that it works? What are the results? Do you have to see these end results? I mean, we see it when you want to control weather. You know it's working. You see it. But when it's subtle, how do you know it's working?
Yeah. Truth is, it's a tricky question because it's like there are, as we've explored, these scientific studies that look at statistics, but, you know, not everyone has access to that or will do those scientific experiments. So to some degree, you know, it can be a question of paying attention in the right way and looking for correlations that match your intentions. So I gave the example before of, you know, we were working with the Salish Sea, and then you see these reports of orca whales being born, which seemed like such an incredible symbol of that bioregion. So, you know, that's a sort of feedback loop that you look for, events that match your intentions in the world. and you have that sense of connection between what you put out and what you see happening.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Utica, New York, east of the Rockies. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hey.
I'd like to share a little bit about my personal experience with meditation.
Sure.
And some success I've had with it. I've been taught how to meditate, and I recently had a significant period of time with someone that I'm close to who was extremely angry with me.
Mm-hmm.
But because I'm able to meditate and get in touch with the peace that's within myself, I was able to listen without getting angry. Mm-hmm. And I could say, hey, wait a minute, this person is crap. I've legitimately wronged this person.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the reserve to say, you know, I need to make amends to you and atone for the wrong I've done you without getting angry in return,
mm-hmm.
or without crippling shame and guilt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very powerful meditation that I've been taught.
Mm-hmm.
And if I may, because my meditation teacher makes his way of meditating available to those sincerely interested free of charge, I'd like to mention his name, if I may.
Go ahead, sure.
His name is Mr. Prem Rawat, capital P-R-E-M, capital R-A-W-A-T. He's been awarded the honorary title of International Ambassador to Peace of Peace by a couple of governments around the world, and has received many, many honors. And his way of meditating is very versatile in that it's not in conflict with any existing religion or belief system.
Who taught him, David? How did he learn?
His father was his teacher.
Ah, well, that's a pretty good teacher.
I think that illustrates something really powerful, because that shows on a personal level, you know, the transformation that happened when you were able to resolve that conflict through engaging in that practice yourself. Just imagine if we can learn to apply that on the collective level, you know, like all of these huge conflicts taking place. That's what I see as the potential of this work as we get more and more into it, is that we could learn exactly that principle, but on the collective level. And you know, you could see all sorts of healings take place just like you did in that relationship, but you know, for the world.
Do you think that successful people have done this, that they tap into this form of meditation?
I think many successful people have a sort of an intuitive grasp of those principles, whether or not, you know, some of them I think do have a practice like that. Some of them I feel like they just somehow, you know, they're intrinsically aligned with that sort of principle, and it helps them to move through the world in a peaceful way, successful way. Yeah.
We have Kevin in Tacoma, Washington now, west of the Rockies. Kev, thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you, George. A number of years ago, Art Bell did a group think intentional thought experiment during a particularly nasty drought
right.
in the Southwest. And it kind of backfired on him in that it kind of created a monsoon and floods. And after that, he swore he wouldn't.
That scared him.
Yeah. And do you think, David, using subtle activism or intentional thought, mm-hmm. that in terms of global warming, whether it's man-made or naturally occurring,
mm-hmm.
that we could have an effect on what's going on in the world today? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's, again, it's like this is an art form that we're learning. My organization, the Guyfield Project, we did do some experiments ourselves in convening events that were trying to look at these global weather patterns and climate change and all of that, I feel like in that realm there are people, especially from the shamanic traditions, indigenous wisdom traditions, that have some keys there that that we can learn from. And I think, like you said, it's like the intention is key. So, you know, you could be sort of like the archetypal, magician who goes a bit crazy, and their intention brings about, an unintended result. So I think a lot of this is about learning how to be sort of aligned with our intention, as we were saying, with the universal will, and pure in our intention. So again, there's, it's a power that could be wielded in many different ways, and we need to learn how to do it responsibly.
Let's take a few more calls here before we are out of time. We've got Nancy in Minnesota, first-time caller. Nancy, go for it.
Yes, hello, George.
Hi, Nancy.
I've tried to get you many, many, many times. On a number of issues, and I get real angry here in Minnesota. I'm way up north, and I don't know if they go to sleep or what, but or shut whatever off. But there are times that, I know you're on, but...
Well, let's not waste time about that. Go ahead. Okay. You're on with
okay.
David.
So, number one, I have the same birthday as you in the same year that you have. I find that very interesting.
Uh-huh.
And I would like to say that I'm aware of consciousness. But I went to the cemetery about 30 days after my dad had died in 1989, and I was cold, lonely, angry, tired, exhausted, and bad things were happening. I was in a vehicle where the radio didn't work and the heater didn't work. And after walking up and down, I didn't know where he was, so I went over to my grandma's grave, and I said, Grandma, I don't know where Dad is, but you do. Just tell him I was here and tell him I love him. And, my dad, I had rolled down the right-hand side of the window to, speak to my grandma, as strange as it sounds. And my dad, in a clear as a bell, came on there and said, Nancy, be tough, be strong. You've always been tough. You've always been strong. And I said, but Dad, don't you understand? But this one time, I don't know how. And my radio that didn't work came on and played the song, Daddy's Hand. Mm-hmm. Never heard the song before. But that was the beginning of my being consciously aware of my inner faith.
Well, that's an interesting fact. How aware do you have to be, David, in order to realize how to use this? It doesn't happen by luck, does it?
No. I mean, I think there is a way where you can be. I think the effectiveness of the work, does relate to the skill of the practitioner. But on that level, it's not like a technical skill. I think there's a certain question of how open your heart is for one. Like a sincere heart, I think, is a very critical factor in this sort of work, as much as a refined sort of consciousness. So, being developed on all of these levels, I think, helps. The more open we are in all parts of ourselves, in our hearts, in our bellies, in our minds, in our spirit, then we're more and more open channels, So, but I think a sincere heart is one of the most critical factors.
I think it's an amazing tool to be able to tap into consciousness. I may differ with you a little bit when you say that the masses are more powerful than the individual. Mm. I think an individual who really understands this, who really gets it, mm-hmm. might be able to change and alter things pretty dramatically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there are cases in history, where, Sri Aurobindo is an example, an Indian teacher, who claims that, you know, he was a prominent activist. He engaged. He was put to jail in the Indian independence movement, and then he had this spiritual awakening. And then later in his life, actually during World War II, he claims that from his bedroom, that he did more work on the inner planes to bring change, you know, even to World War II, than he ever did as an activist. And he claims that that came about because of his advanced, you know, yogic capacities. So, you know, I think very adept people may be able to bring about, you know, big influence. But I feel especially interested in what groups can do, especially when they not just sort of, you know, incoherent masses of people, but highly attuned, synergistic, coherent groups. I think they have a particular potential.
We've got Dave in North Carolina on our wild card line. Hey, Dave, go ahead.
Good morning, George and David.
Morning, David. Hi, morning.
David. Real pleasure to call you. I am a 1-year survivor of oral cancer, and I listen to you all the time because I don't sleep through the night, and you really have helped me in my recovery.
Well, thank you.
But what I want to talk about is the power of conscious prayer. Quick background, I had oral cancer, was on the operating table for 13 and a half hours.
Oh, my gosh.
I have my jaw replaced with my shoulder blade, believe it or not.
Wow.
And there were times in the hospital when I knew people were praying for me, and I prayed at those same times, and the healing power was amazing. Mm. And I have a blog on a site called caringbridge.org, mm-hmm. and if you look up my name, David Vance, you can see kind of a daily journal of what I went through. But anyways, when I write in this blog, I ask for prayers, very specific prayers. And then I see a lot of people or get post, you know, return journal updates from people telling me what they're doing as far as praying for me. And it's amazing how much God has rallied around me. I had radiation and chemo along with this operation, and I basically feel very little pain. And the doctors just can't...
They can't believe it, can they?
They can't. I mean, my chemo doctor said to me, Dave, guys like you come in, and they say they don't feel pain, and they're usually the first ones crying and screaming for pain medication.
Right.
And he said, you came in not saying anything, just praying. And he said, I don't understand why you can feel this pain. I woke up during the operation. I was mistakenly left a day without painkillers. I had a tracheotomy, a feeding tube, and on and on and on. And it's just amazing how being prepared going into this with a small army of people praying for me. I go to church and tell them that I'm a living testimony to their power
of prayer.
Yeah, beautiful story.
You know, when people pray to God, are they praying to God or are they praying to something in the universe that's universal? You know, this mm-hmm. mass, whatever it might be. What do you think?
Yeah, and again, it's kind of a deep philosophical...
I know, you're not a theologian.
Yeah, but, you know, personally, I relate to the sense of this profound, mysterious intelligence. I think why it's so difficult to, you know, it's so mysterious and so complex, it's hard to capture in any words. You know, many people say that. And so, for some, it can feel like a personal presence, and others, it's, you know, other traditions, it's more of an impersonal ground, you know. But to me, it's just the best way I like to think of it is as a mystery, a great mystery, an intelligent mystery.
Let's go to Wentz in Texas real fast. Wentz, go ahead.
Yeah. Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
George. David.
Hi, Wentz.
My experience has been with prayer over time, and if my voice changes, don't pay too much attention to it. It's just I call it my angelical realm.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Like David was speaking, it's all on a interpersonal level. When you, I just want to ask, in general right now, any one of you has any kind of scar tissue or anything right now, so I can try to explain a little bit of what can happen with a little bit of meditation.
Well, unfortunately, we are running out of time, 30 seconds to go, but I've got a little scar from a cut when I was running with my hamster, and the bowl broke and shattered and snipped me. But whatever you're going to do, Wentz, do it now and see what happens. David, thank you for being on the program. Keep in touch with us, will you?
Thank you so much, George. Can I just mention wiseusa.net?
Sure, go ahead.
We're running a Liberty Bell Minute campaign between October 2nd and just after the election. It's transpartisan. It's to come together for a minute a day to call forth wisdom and compassion. No matter what your politics, we can unite in that intention. It's inspired by a project from World War II in Britain where they came together for a minute a day.
Super. And what's the website?
It's wiseusa.net.
Wiseusa.net. You got it. Okay, I'll be back in a moment. Open lines.